Thank you. Shavua Tov, everybody.
Sharon,
yes, Sharon, for the organ. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you. Okay. So our topic for tonight is hypercriticism and its antidote in the concept of being Dan Lekaf Zchut. The concept of Dan Lekaf Zchut is something which we tend to have a very basic, what I call like the kindergarten stage understanding. You know, you watch somebody, a Jewish person, walking into McDonald's, and they walk out and they're chewing on something, and you say maybe they ate their kosher sandwich, maybe they needed the bathroom, maybe my glasses are dirty. It's a very, very basic level of understanding of judging people favorably. Really, this is a concept which requires a lot of sophistication, and you know, it's been said that there's a lot of mitzvot in the Torah for different purposes, and that this is like a mitzvah for naive people. They didn't mean it, they didn't really do it. The truth is exactly the opposite. It's a mitzvah for the cognitively sophisticated person who can change their preconceived notion about something and have the cognitive flexibility to see something from a different perspective. And that alone takes a lot of sophistication, because usually we size people up and we size situations up, and it's hard for us to break out of the way we've already defined a situation. So this Mita is going to really talk about a certain kind of flexibility, the ability to change, and that itself is very sophisticated. Let's just start with where it appears in the Torah. And in Vayikra, Perek Yutes, the Pasuk says, B'tzedek tishpot amitecha. And the Rambam says that B'tzedek tishpot amitecha is talking about three possible groups of people. The first pshat in the pasuk, "B'tzedek tishpot amitecha," you should judge your people fairly, is talking to judges. If you already are a judge, make sure to judge fairly, not to have biases, not to be swayed, not to be bribed. That's the first level. The second level of the way the Monei Mitzvot understand this is that it's referring to people who are capable of being judges. If you have the credentials and the ability to be a judge, do not avoid this profession, because we need good judges. Please become a judge. And the third category that the Rambam says, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, is for the rest of the people. Meaning, the Pasuk is telling you that you're all judges in the courtroom of your own mind, and please judge people favorably. So this is the level that we're going to talk on. The Gemara, then in Masechet Shvuot, the Gemara says, we know that pasuk, we know that concept. And then what I really want to talk to today is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. What does the Mishnah say? It's a Mishnah that we all know. Aseh lecha rav, uknei lecha chaver, ve'vedan et kol adam lekaf zchut. So the Mishnah is telling me, choose a rav, acquire a friend, and judge everybody favorably. And what we want to understand tonight, in order to understand this means and how it affects us, because I like to bring things down to our level, is what's the context of the Mishnah? Judging favorably has something to do with choosing a rav and choosing a friend. So here we're going to see the different mefarshim in Perkei Avos see it differently. Rav Shimshon Farhurst says something very interesting. He says that why does the Mishnah tell you to judge favorably within this context? Because when you choose a rav and you choose a friend, it's a selective process. Not everybody's going to be your close friend, and not everybody's going to be your rav. So you're entitled to selectively choose people who are going to be in your inner circle. But then the Mishnah warns you. There are people who didn't make the grade. They didn't become your rav, and they didn't become your friend. But those people, you have to judge them favorably. Just because you did not elect them to be in your inner circle does not mean that you're allowed to be critical of them. And that's what the Mishnah is telling us, according to Rav Shimshon Farhurst. I like to say that if you think about the psychology of certain people, if you're in my inner circle, you're safe. My people I love. I don't judge you, I don't look at you. But it's the person who's not in my inner circle, the person from the different community, or a different hashkafa, or a different way of life, whatever it is, those are the people who I don't have a good feeling about them. And in an most extreme form, in psychology, we talk about the concept of xenophobia with an X, which means fear of strangers. And most cultures accuse other cultures of all kinds of things, everything from, you know, lack of hygiene to immorality to violence to bad parenting skills to everything else. And in a certain extent, that would be the extreme manifestation of what Shem Shalom Parsha is talking about. My inner circle is fine, but if you're out there, you're not fine in my mind for many different reasons. Then we're going to see the opposite phenomena. And here is a parish called the Be'er Avot on Perkei Avot. And the Be'er Avot says something exactly the opposite. He says, you choose your Rav and you choose your friends, and some people, once they've chosen their inner circle, they take out their magnifying glass and they become critical of the people who they've chosen. Meaning, my inner circle is not safe. Because, and think about what's going on here, I chose you as my friend and that's how you act. This is my rabbi and that's what he does. It's people who, as long as you're a stranger, you're fine, I don't really care. But if I've chosen you and you're in my inner circle, then I'm very critical of you. If you notice what the Mishnah is doing here, the Mishnah is telling you that for this argument, the criticism is focused on who, not what. Meaning, it's a certain kind, it's my position and my relationship with you, that's who I'm critical of. Meaning, if I'm critical of my inner circle, I might be critical of many, many different things. So here the whole topic is, who am I critical of? My outer circle, my inner circle. And the inner circle criticism, what is that? If you think about it, people who are perfectionistic and have high standards that they hold themselves to tend to project their standards onto their inner circle. Because my child better act perfect. And my rabbi better be perfect. And my friends better be perfect. I say to my students sometimes when they're dating that is a very different process. If you're a self-accepting kind of person who's not very perfectionistic, when you first meet somebody new, you might notice his faults. But as you get to know him better, and it's more likely that he will be in your inner circle, that you might marry him, we say, Al kol pesham tachase ava. I like you, and I can accept you. Just the same way I accept my own faults, my own blemishes, I can accept you. For the perfectionist, the process is the opposite. Because when you first meet a new person, I don't have a problem with your faults. But as I get to know you better, and it's more likely that you're going to be mine, I start taking out my magnifying glass. And these are the people who call me right before they get engaged, and they tell me, I don't know if he's this enough for me, I don't know if he's after me, I don't know if I like this. Meaning they only get stressed when this person is going to reflect them. And they have very high personal standards. They're very tough on themselves. So they're also tough on anybody who's going to be in their inner circle. So this is an interesting thing to consider. I once gave over this shir, and a woman in the crowd gave a very big sigh after I taught this inner circle, outer circle thing. And I said, what's wrong? She said, I'm both. That's also possible to be both. But the way it manifests in our behavior is that if you're an outer circle critical person, if you're sitting in the park with your child, and there's another child who goes to a different school, who's, you know, you don't really know that family so well, you might say to him, don't go play with that child. I don't know, you know. I don't know if he's our type. I don't know if he, I don't know. If you're the inner circle critical type, you're sitting in the park, and you're taking to your child, why can't you behave more like him? He's so well behaved, that little boy over there. You should be acting like him. And there are different types of mothers and different types of women. But these are the two types that the Mishnah is talking about. There's a third parish, the Yismach Moshe, who says that really the context of the Mishnah is about maintaining your friendships and your relationships. Asalacha rav uknelacha chaver, acquire for yourself and a rav and a friend, that's important. And then ve'vedanat kol adam l'kav zchot, judge people favorably, because otherwise you'll lose your rav and your chaver. People don't like being around critical people. So if you want to hold on to the people who you've acquired, work on not being critical, because otherwise you distance your friends and your rabbi. That's the context of the Mishnah. If you think about it, this is really all focused on who I'm critical of. And some people have one person in their life where they're in a very complicated relationship and everything this person does bothers me. And others don't have that, but they have a tendency to be critical of strangers or to be critical of inner circle, whatever that is. Now I would like to look at a completely different way of looking at this midah. And the completely different way is looking that the focus of my criticism is not who, but what. There are some people who the reason why they're critical is because it's a certain topic that they're very sensitive about, and anybody who I see a weakness in that area activates me. So it doesn't matter if they're in my inner circle, my outer circle, the focus is not the person, the focus is the topic. I like to say about this phenomena, that unfortunately, sometimes being critical comes with the territory. Sometimes being critical comes with the territory of caring. And this is complicated for us, because if you're apathetic about things and you don't really care, then you're also not so critical of people who are not living up to a certain expectation. So I like to say about myself, at one point I wasn't so aware about certain topics, and I remember this. I once started to read a lot about nutrition for children. Beforehand, I could sit in the park and watch mothers giving their kids sour sticks and all kinds of food coloring and sugar. It wouldn't bother me. I didn't know anything about it. Once I started reading about different effects of sugar and food coloring on children, so I started being aware that mothers are poisoning their children and then wondering why the kid's going hyper and whatever. You don't have to agree with me. Some people don't think that sugar and food coloring cause anything. But let's say, just for argument's sake. So when you become sensitized to something and it's important to you, sometimes you can't help but noticing people who are not doing the right thing from your perspective. And this becomes the struggle, because we want to have high standards, but we don't want to be critical of people who don't have the same standards as us. And I like to say in the religious context, that I always tell my students, when you come to Israel for the year, your growth in Ben Adam L'Makom is not supposed to lead your Ben Adam L'Chaver to go down. I say, when you're ready to accept and love people who did not pick up the same sensitivities that you did, then you're ready to go home. Because it's not an excuse to be critical of people because I've picked up some sensitivities somewhere. So we have to be able, this is a hard balance, we have to be able to aspire for growth and not be critical of people who are not working on the same things that I'm working on. And this becomes the challenge. So we have to think about this a little bit. And how do we relate to this? So first of all, I'd like to just give us a source from the Gemara for this. The Gemara in Masechet Shavuot says this, what's going on with the person who's critical of a certain topic? So the Gemara tells us two things. Kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. Anybody who is critical is being critical in an area where he himself is faulty. That's one concept that the Gemara says. In the same place, Dafayin and Kiddushin, the Gemara says, Kol ha-posel pasul. Anybody who negates other people is blemished himself. Now, one of these is a blanket statement, a wider statement, and the other one is a more specific statement. If you look at the second one first, Kol ha-posel pasul is basically saying to me, why am I obsessing about somebody else's weaknesses? I have nothing better to think about. What's wrong with me that it's so much on my radar screen what other people are doing wrong? And the Gemara is telling you that something's pasul. There's something, either your self-esteem is such that you need to get a high from somebody else's weakness, or there's something going on with you, because people do a lot of things. What, you can notice something that somebody does, but the fact that I think about it and I'm critical of it, what's going on with me? But the Gemara gives a more specific direction, where it says, Kol ha-posel b'mumo posel. If you really want to figure out what's going on with you, the first thing you can ask yourself is, where is this midah in me? Because sometimes we have something going on within ourselves, but we're not comfortable owning it and admitting that we have a weakness. So, but we're aware of it, as the expression says, takes one to know one. So I know what that midah looks like. I can't help but noticing it in other people and being critical of it in other people. And these are the selfish people who always talk about people who are selfish, and the lazy people who talk about other people's laziness. Meaning, it's something that I have, and I kind of project it onto you, and I don't like it in you. But I have to say that when I deal with this in my small muster groups, we deal with this midah, many women can pinpoint an area that they're very sensitive about, but then when they look to see if they can find it in themselves, they say no. Maybe sometimes it's the opposite. I'm very, very, very much a punctual person, and that's why I can't stand people who come late. Not that I'm also always coming late, but the opposite. So here we have to understand that sometimes dafka when people are very... I like to say that there's three categories of the way we interact with the mitzvah. Either it's like the Gemara saying, kol posel b'mumo posel, it's my weakness, I see it in you, that's why I don't like it. That's one kind of person. Then we have another kind of person whose strengths are exactly the opposite. And because of that, I just cannot understand how somebody can not come on time. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I cannot tolerate it. We're going to say something about that in a minute. And then we have the third category, and this is the hardest category. The hardest one is, I used to be like you, and I changed myself. Ooh, these are the most critical people. Because I know what it's like, but like I got my act together, time for you to get your act together. These people are very activated. When you see somebody who has a behavior pattern they used to have, and you changed it in yourself, very hard to tolerate the other person with their weakness. So, I'd like to say there's a famous tzaddik in Yerushalayim today, by the name of Tzvi Meyer Zilberberg, who's a known, he kind of bridges the Hasidic and Litvish world, and many people like to go to hear his sichot on different topics. He wrote a whole sefer on Dion Kafsel on this topic. I love to read his sefer. Why? Because he's a person with incredibly high personal standards, who's not critical of anybody who doesn't have the standards. And those are the people you want to learn this from. Because it's not about not caring about anything. It's about caring and not being critical. So I've read his sefer, many, many ideas I've gotten from his sefer. And he's a very, very big tzaddik. The first point that he says it in bold letters in one of his sichos, he says, being critical of somebody else, even if it's a spiritual topic that's bothering you, a spiritual sensitivity, the fact that you're critical is not coming from the higher place in your personality. It's coming from a lower place in your personality. Now, you might think that it's coming from a higher place because I just can't handle when people dress like that or talk like that or act like that. It bothers me. I'm sensitive. He says, good that you're sensitive, not good that you're so critical of other people. That's the lower place in you that's focusing. It could be the topic is an important topic. The fact that you're obsessing about it is never coming from a good place. So there must be a way to objectify the issue, care about it, and not be all over the fact that my neighbor doesn't do this properly. And that's the concept of distinction between itamu chatam velo chotim. You can say that the sin should be gone, but not the sinner. So he says, whenever you're focusing too much on what somebody's doing wrong, it's never coming from a good place. That's his first principle. But he says some beautiful things about being down the cusp that I want to mention. Let's say we're talking about our person who's worked on themselves a lot and changed something in themselves and can't help but being critical of the people who aren't. So he brings a mashal, he brings a very male mashal, but I will bring it down to a woman's level. He says, why the anger? Why are we so angry at people who are not into the thing that we're into? We're not sensitive. Why that emotion? Why that negativity? He says, I'm saying this, he doesn't say it exactly this way, but what's really going on is you're catching somebody exposed. Because you're sensitive to a certain topic, it's on your radar screen, and you pick up nuances. So you picked up that this person is not so good in this area. They might not know that they're exposed. They might not even care. But behold, you're picking up something, a weakness in them, that they might not even be aware that they're manifesting, either because they don't know, they don't care, they're not aware, whatever it is. But you're picking up something, a weakness in them. So the mashal for this would be, imagine if there was a very, very well-dressed woman who was walking down the street, perfectly dressed, and she's walking with a lot of confidence, except that there's something unfortunate, like her zipper might be open, or her slip is down on the floor, or some button is open. She's walking completely confidently, thinking that she looks on top of the world, and you've noticed that there's something unfortunate. So, if you're not the type to go tap her on the shoulder and tell her, which some people will and some people won't, what's the next thing that you should do if you're not going to do that? You're not angry at her. You modestly and sympathetically turn to the side and you don't look. I'm sorry I saw that. You wouldn't want me to notice that. I'm kind of embarrassed for you and I'm looking away. And the next thing, watch people, you see people do this, you start checking your own slip. Why? Because I know this could happen to me as well. I could also be quite exposed.
Oh, this. Okay, yes, yes.
Thank you. Perfect. The feeling is one of somewhat, I'm sorry I saw that. And the more humane response of, this could happen to anybody, it could happen to me too. But Sri Mari says that when you see a weakness in somebody, even in the spiritual area, you look away, I'm sorry I saw that. And then you look at your own and you say, you know what, I'm sure I have areas where I'm weak, where I'm exposed, where I don't even realize that I'm exposed. Could happen to me too. So the energy turns away from being negative and critical to being more humane. Okay, we all have our things. I look away, and I know that I'm also have weaknesses that are exposed. The next point that he says, which I think also is very important, is really directed towards the person who feels that they've worked very hard on something, and why don't you get it together and work too? He says the nature of that kind of a feeling is something a little condescending. It's like, I worked very hard on this kind of a thing. He says you're attributing your success in this area to yourself, and you're looking down on people who didn't work as hard as you. So he says something fascinating, which I've thought about many times. He says when we work hard in a certain area and we see results, we tend to attribute most of it to our own hishtadlut, meaning I worked hard on this, and I sweat, and I changed this, and I bought that, and I worked on this. He says you will never know the balance between your efforts and siyata d'shmaya. You think that 95% of the reason why I'm different today is because I put in effort. He says, but you don't know the balance between that and siyata d'shmaya. Maybe it's only 5% your efforts and 95% the fact that Hashem helped you. And what's siyata d'shmaya in this context? The fact that I got exposed to the right thing, the fact that I was inspired, the fact that I was motivated to work on it, the fact that I was successful working on it, the fact that I stuck to my goals, that I internalized it. Much of that is siyata d'shmaya. And you don't really know the balance between your effort and siyata d'shmaya. So basically, you won the lottery. You have siyata d'shmaya in this area. The person who is manifesting as not being so successful doesn't necessarily have the same siyata d'shmaya as you. So you're going to be angry at somebody for not winning the lottery? Daven for them that they should win it also, that they should be matzliach. And on the way, daven for yourself to get siyata d'shmaya in your weak areas. But the whole energy turns away from negative, critical, condescending to compassion, sympathy, I'm not perfect, I have to thank Hashem for what I have. It's a whole different way of viewing people. That's it. So these are the two major points that I learned from Rav Tzvi Meyer about our attitude when you see a weakness in somebody and how you should be able to reframe it. But I'd like to go back for a second. The Chafetz Chaim talks about, when I said that the kindergarten level of Dan Lakas Tzvot that we have in our head about like, oh, maybe they didn't really, you know, go into McDonald's, maybe they're not really eating that, maybe they didn't kosher sandwich. The Chafetz Chaim says that there's really five levels that you're supposed to go through when you see somebody do something, or, you know, it doesn't have to be somebody do something, it could be somebody said something. And there's five levels that you're supposed to go from one to the fifth until you find something that resonates and you can feel good about the situation. So the first one is what the Chafetz Chaim calls etzem hadavar, the actual thing that you think that they did, maybe they didn't do. And this could be something like somebody made a comment, and it's ambiguous. I'm not sure, do they mean to offend me? Do they mean that as a barb? Do they not? You know, we always think of Dan Lakas Tzvot, do they eat the not kosher sandwich? Do they not? It's, in our lives, it's much more likely that it's going to be something like, what did she mean by that comment? And it could be that one way or the other way. Dan Lakas Tzvot is that she didn't mean badly. So the first thing that I'm thinking is etzem hadavar, according to the Chafetz Chaim. Maybe the thing that I thought she said, she didn't even really mean to say that. She didn't say it. I once had a student who came to me, and she said to me, she left at the end of a school year, she parted from a very good friend, who said goodbye to her with like some kind of a one-line statement. And she said she was so hurt by the thing that her friend said that for 2 months she was in pain over that one-liner. They got together in September, and her friend picked up in a second that something was off and said, what's bothering you? It's a little pulling it out. She got her friend to say what had happened. She said, the friend says back to her, that's not what I said. I said this. Completely different word, changed the whole context. And it was not an insult at all. Such a shame. 2 months of pain for something that wasn't even really said. So the first thing we have to think is etzem hadavar. Maybe the thing that I thought was said was not the thing that I thought that happened didn't really happen. Number two, it really did happen, but it was b'shogeg, the Chofetz Chaim says. The person didn't really mean to offend me. They didn't really mean to do that bad thing, whatever the thing was. They did say the thing, or they did do that thing, but they did it as a mistake. And you keep moving from one to the other until something resonates by you. If you know that it wasn't a mistake, you move on. Number three, the Chofetz Chaim calls chumrat ha'isor. The person didn't realize how bad it was, the thing that they did. And again, it could be a halachic violation, or it could be the way that someone treated you. They did it, it wasn't a mistake, but they had no idea how negative the ramifications would be. And that happens a lot. Number four, I'm missing a detail. There's some detail that if I would have in this story, I would see the whole thing differently. And I have to tell you, ladies, that this is the one that I always found the hardest. If you're a detailed person, if you kind of take in a situation, especially if it's somebody who you know, come on, what detail? You know, if you show up at a scene 5 minutes after something happened, you could be missing a detail. But if the whole thing unraveled in front of my eyes, what detail am I actually missing? So, true stories are better than fake stories. And this is a true story that happened to me many years ago. My oldest son is 22 years old now. When he was around four, he had a friend who lived like five houses down from me, who came over to my house to play one Shabbos after Hadlakas Neros. So after I light candles, I give out like a little Shabbos treat. And that was before I learned about the nutrition thing. Sarah's six. A lot of fruit going. So I gave out to this child with all my child. He gobbled up the piece of licorice and he asked me for another one. I gave him a second piece. He gobbled it up and he asked me for a third. At which point I started saying to myself, maybe his mother doesn't want me to fill him up with licorice before the Friday night meal. So I said to him, you know what, honey? Come back next week. When I give out treats next week after candlelighting, I'll give you more. To which he looks me straight in the face and he says to me, but I'm going to be living in Australia by next week. I'm thinking to myself, that's interesting. His mother's my neighbor. And as far as I know, they're not moving to Australia. I live in Yerushalayim. I said, okay, it's a little far for a child to go to get a piece of licorice. But I went with his thing. I said, okay, so if you really want another piece, go home and ask your mother if you can have. He looks me straight in the face and he says to me, I can't go ask my mother, she's dead. At which point I started saying, my son is friends with a pathological liar. And then I wondered if you could even say pathology at age four, but something about it seemed very extreme. To say that your mother's dead to get a piece of licorice is like pretty, pretty extreme. So it was going on in my head. And then the next day, I get a knock on my front door. Somebody's inviting me to come to a goodbye party for this family because they're moving to Australia this week. So I knew that the first part of the story was not a lie. But clearly, if I'm invited to Robin's goodbye party, then Robin's alive, Baruch Hashem. So the second part of the story wasn't true. I go to this party, and I said, Robin, I didn't even know you were moving to Australia. She said, yeah, no, my husband just got a job. We made a quick one-week decision. We're packing everything up. We're running. I said, wow, that must be very, very intense. Like, how are you managing? She said, I'm not coping. I'm dead. Poor choice of words, granted. But when the child said that I can't ask my mother because she's dead, he meant I can't bother her because she's overwhelmed. And I was missing a detail. So it made me realize that even when a whole story unravels in front of you, you still could be missing a detail. There's something here that you're not getting. And it's really possible. Number five, if even the detail thing doesn't help you, is the last stop in Bizan Lekavsvot. Chazal tell us, Al tadinat chavercha ad shetagelem komo. Don't judge a person unless you're in his shoes. And the message is a message in differentiation. Meaning, I'm not you. With my personality traits and sensitivities and backgrounds, for me to do that action would be really, really unacceptable. But I'm not you. And if I were you, maybe I would deal with things differently. And I tend to think that this is something, a message, which we have to think about, because we tend to imply on others our standards. We see things through our glasses, and what for me would be not acceptable, you're different. You have different stresses, different triggers, different strong areas, different weak areas. And I think this whole differentiation thing is important for us because we so easily apply our standards onto everybody else. We even do it nicely. I see it so often. You have a mother and a daughter coming back from some performance or something. And you say to the mother, how was it? The mother says, we had a great time. I'm wondering, did the girl really have a great time? That we is I had a great time, and I'm assuming that my daughter also had a great time. But sometimes a mother and a daughter experience things differently. So I had a great time, the kid was bored out of her mind. So we need to be able to say, there's me and there's you, and you have your things and I have my things, and just because I'm experiencing this a certain way doesn't mean that you experience it the same way. And that's the final stop of the Chafetz Chaim. I'm judging you through my experiences. And I'm not in your shoes, and I really don't know what you're experiencing, even if I think I do. And at that point, it should resonate. If the other four don't resonate, then number five should. And that's really the message of Chafetz Chaim. Okay. I'd like to get into something very interesting, which is trying to understand the ramifications of this concept of Dan LeKasler. We always bring it up in an interpersonal context. This is about feeling better about people. It's about not being critical of people. But really, there's a big machlokas as to what the purpose of this whole concept is. So the Maharshal says it's about shalom. It's about having a community where people are at peace with each other. Because if everybody's critical of each other and looking down and negative, it's not a peaceful place to live. So we work on overcoming our critical nature in order to create a peaceful, harmonious community. In fact, the Gemara, Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara in Amud Mem Vav. No, it's Masechet Tzadik Vav. The Gemara says something very interesting, which doesn't seem to make sense. The Gemara says, "Hachoshed b'ksherim, lo kebegufo." Somebody who is suspicious of an innocent person gets hit on his body. Now, we know there is a concept called malchus in Beit Din, but it's not given to somebody who's not judging somebody favorably. It's given for much more extreme behavior. So what does the Gemara mean when it says Choshed b'ksherim lo kebegufo? So the Maharal explains this Gemara figuratively. He says that when you are Choshed b'ksherim, when you're suspicious of innocent people, you create a circle of suspicion. You create a society where people don't trust each other. They don't look at each other in a positive light. Lo kebegufo, eventually you will be ensnared in your own trap. It will come back and hit you. You're circulating an atmosphere of suspiciousness. You think nobody's ever going to accuse you of something that you didn't do? Nobody's ever going to be suspicious of you? Hachoshe v'kshem loke begufo means that we all contribute to the atmosphere that the community has. And if I'm a suspicious person, and I'm negative, and I'm critical, that creates an atmosphere that could hit back on me, loke begufo. Eventually it will hit me as well. The Maharil Diskin says something very, very interesting about this Mida. He says, really, it's about having higher standards in the community, not just about shalom. He says like this. He says, when a person is about to sin, sometimes something that will hold a person back from sinning, I think we all can recognize this in ourselves, is the embarrassment that somebody expects more of me. If people think I'm on a certain standard, then it kind of keeps me in line a little bit because, I don't want to disappoint them. So the Maharal Diskin says this is the purpose of being Dan LeKasler. When you view other people favorably, you have a high regard, you have a high standard for them, because you view them on a certain level, they'll end up living up to your expectations more. When a person thinks that you think that they're a garbage pail anyway, what do they care if they messed up in front of you? That's what you think of them anyway. So the Maharal Diskin says if you want to have a community with high standards of self-development and growth and spirituality, you have to be Dan LeKasler, because then people view each other in high regard and everybody starts living up to the standard of what's the way they're perceived. That's the purpose. Yismach Moshe, who we quoted before in the Mishnah and Avos, says something else. He says, there's a Chil Hashem factor. Every time a person does an Avera, there's two aspects of the Avera. one aspect, in fact, of whatever spiritual kilkul I've done. And then there's the fact that other people saw somebody doing something against Hashem's will. He says, when you're down the kaf schutz, at least the chil Hashem factor is not there. Because I'm not looking to find your sins. So there's less chil Hashem in the world. And it's like one of these midot that has many different ramifications. But the most fascinating one I want to tell you is the intrapersonal factor. Listen to this. This is coming from Rabbi Yedaya HaPanini, who lived in the time of the Rambam in Provence. So he wrote a parish on Pirkei Avos where he says something fascinating. He says, when you judge somebody favorably, what are you doing? There's an ambiguous situation of good and bad mixed together. You're extracting the good option, and you're pushing away the bad. She didn't mean to offend me. And you push away this, she's trying to offend me, right? You're extracting good over bad. He says, when you get used to doing this, it will affect you and your personal decisions as well. I have to make a decision about something, and I'm ambivalent. I'm not sure what's right here, what's wrong here, there's good, there's bad, I'm very ambivalent. He says, you will get used to extracting good over bad. You have a good nose, a good smell for good choices, because you've done this in your interpersonal dhammakas, because you've chosen good over bad. Now, when I make my own decisions about what's good or bad for me in my life, I know how to extract good over bad. He says, over time, people who are down the cuffs would make better personal choices. Fascinating. It reminded me that I once said this idea over, and there was a woman who told me that she was learning Hilchos Shabbos in Neve Yerushalayim in Yerushalayim, and the teacher was explaining Borer, the three conditions for doing Borer on Shabbos. And one of the conditions is that you have to choose good over bad. You have to choose good out of bad. She said, the teacher smiled at them and said, and try to do this in your interpersonal relationships as well. Choose good over bad. So there's a general concept of choosing good over bad. And that's what Rav Yedaya HaPanini says. It will affect you in other ways. Okay, I want to start winding down, and I'll be happy to take questions if anybody has questions. But I think when we think about this midah, we also have to think about the concept of what we call hashpat ha-sviva, the influence of the surroundings. Now, the very basic level of hashpat ha-sviva is that if you're around good people, you'll be influenced for the good. If you're around bad people, you'll be influenced for the bad. The Nesiv HaShalom, the Slonim HaRebbe, says very, very beautifully that there's a psychological aspect of hashpat ha-sviva as well. You could be living in a community of tzaddikim, but if you're a critical person and you're always noticing what everybody's doing bad, doing wrong, you're living in a negative sviva. You're living in a garbage pail. This one messed up that way, this one isn't so nice, this one isn't that. So it doesn't really matter what the standards are, because in my head, I'm always noticing everybody's weak points, and eventually it has a bad effect on me as well. The opposite is also true. You could live among people who are not necessarily of a higher standard than you. But if you're noticing all the good things that everybody's doing, then you're living in a Gan Eden. People are on the way up. And it influences you as well. And I once heard that Rav Aaron Cutler had said this about the idea of doing Kiruv, Rehokim. He says, people move out to a community where they are the rabbi in a community that's maybe not even, mostly not Shomer Shabbos. So in order to protect the children, what's natural sometimes is to point out, you know, we don't eat what they eat, we don't wear what they wear, we don't drive on Shabbos, we don't do this, we don't do that. And you're doing this with the good intentions of protecting your children from bad influences. But according to this method, it could have exactly the counter influence. Because if you're always pointing out what everybody's doing wrong, your child wants to fit in. Why should he be the only tzaddik doing the right things around here if everybody's doing something wrong? And sometimes it's a little bit counter. But if you say to the children, look at that family, they're trying so hard not to drive on Shabbos. And look at that family, they give a lot of tzedakah. And look at that family, they're trying hard. So the child starts seeing that the whole community is on its way up. And it influences him to want to be good as well. One of the principles that we could derive from this in educating children is that sometimes it's very tempting when you're educating your child to a certain value to demonstrate it through pointing out what somebody isn't doing. We wear this and this and this, not like Mrs. Schwartz's skirt, or not like... That would be completely the wrong thing to do. Because we need people... In general, the question that you could ask on that Kirov model that I just mentioned is you could say, well, if I'm always pointing out the good that everybody's doing, how's a child going to have a chinuch to high standards? So the answer to that is, teach your standards objectively. Teach your child about kashrut, about tzniut, about Shabbos, about whatever it is. The child understands himself when he sees somebody who's not doing it right. He's smart. He knows that person's not doing it right. So you can spend a lot of time educating to objective standards. This is what we believe in. This is why. But don't fall to the temptation of pointing to somebody else to demonstrate the negative. Not like them. When do we use other people to demonstrate? When it's a positive thing. When you're teaching your child about a value and you have somebody who's doing it and you say, look at Mr. Schwartz who gives a lot of tzedakah, so then that's a good thing for your child to hear you point out. But sometimes it's so tempting when we're upset at somebody for what they're doing wrong to use the opportunity to demonstrate to our children. According to this, the Nesilah Shalom says, you need to create a positive hashpas tzivah for your child that he sees the good in people if you want him to rise to the occasion. And he said something very interesting, which only he could say. He says, you know, there's a big problem when people take their child to a Chilul Shabbos demonstration. In Yerushalayim, you have this sometimes, you know, a demonstration against Chilul Shabbos. So you think you're taking your child to teach him that Chilul Shabbos is a bad thing. He says, don't take your child to a Chilul Shabbos demonstration because he'll learn about Chilul Shabbos from the demonstration. Wow, there's so many people who drive on Shabbos. And then a certain kind of kid, so why don't we drive on Shabbos? The fitting in kind of child. He says, you use people to demonstrate positive and not negative. And this is the concept of the psychological hashvata tzviva. It all depends what I want to see in people. And I can grow on my own level because other people are growing. Or I could go down because I think people are going down. This is really up to us to decide how we choose to perceive our environment and what we choose to put in our... Okay, I'm going to wind down and take some questions, but I just want to end with something that Rabbi Meir Zilberberg says, which is such a beautiful thing. He says, one of the problems with being critical is that you're hyper-focusing on one aspect of a person, whereas the Mishnah says to Vedana, it's kol adam. You should see the whole person. Rabbi Meir says very beautifully, if you've ever gone to a world-famous museum and you looked at a world-famous picture, what you do is you stand back and you take it and you're looking at the Mona Lisa. The tourists are all standing far away from the picture and trying to get in the whole picture. Imagine if there was a tourist who walked into the museum, pulled out his magnifying glass, and walked up to the corner of the Mona Lisa and started focusing on a certain speck in the picture. What would you say? This person doesn't know how to appreciate art. That's not how you take in a picture. Tzvi Meir said that when we're hypercritical of people, we don't realize that every Jew is a piece of art, is a work of art. The way you appreciate a work of art is you stand back and you take in the whole person. When we focus on one specific aspect of a person that we don't like, we're like the tourist who's like doing something strange in the museum. And the premise is that we don't really realize sometimes that every Jew is a work of art. If we would realize that, we would stand back and take it in and see a whole beautiful picture, which maybe has some specks, we all do, but this is a big, beautiful picture. And that's maybe the parting message from this Midah, is to remember that every Jew is a work of art and therefore deserves to be seen in perspective from a distance, taking in the whole thing. Okay, thank you very much, everybody. I'm very happy to take any questions, if anybody has anything you'd like to ask. Yes? I don't even know how to do this. No, somebody knows how to do this.